is on the ground on one knee, scoops it up with his gloved hand, whips it over to Trotsky. A close decision. Eddie's out. The ball game is over. Bob Feller has his first no-hit game. Boy, listen to that crowd.
The 40s began the way the 30s ended. Everybody was still swinging and missing at Feller's fastball. The Yankee Clipper had his sails set and was out racing a record book and the Brooklyn Dodgers.
67,000 fans at Municipal Stadium in Cleveland watching to see if Joe DiMaggio can keep his 56-game hitting streak alive. Jim Bagby on the mound, works the count for one and one. Runner on first base. Here's the pitch. Joe DiMaggio swings that ground ball hit out to short to Lou Goodrow. He flips three back for one out. Relays to Giants at first. It's in time for a double play. Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak is stopped.
Nobody knew it in those early 40s, but the call they'd soon be answering wasn't play ball. It was the draft call. Off to war went the established stars and the promising rookies. Hugh Mulkey of the Phillies was the first of the regulars to be drafted, and soon Rapid Robert Feller was in Navy Blue. And Ted Williams, a 406 hitter in 1941, was flying for the Marines. Baseball had barely settled down after the war when the Brooklyn Dodgers signed Jackie Robinson.
Jack, when Ricky brought you up, what was your chief ambition, to become a major league ball player or to become the first Negro to play in organized baseball?
Well, I don't think either one of them was that. I think my main ambition was to get along well enough with whoever I was playing with so that they would realize that there wasn't any friction because I was colored and they were white. I mean, we could play together. I think that was my main ambition, was to break down that barrier, not so much for me to go to the major leagues. I just wanted somebody to go. I didn't care who it was.
Next came three of the most exciting plays in all World Series history.
Enos Slaughter's on first base with two away. Harry Walker at bat, Bob Klinger on the mound. He takes the stretch, here's the pitch, there goes Slaughter. The ball is swung on, there's a line drive going to the left center field. It's in there for a base hit. Culberson fumbles the ball momentarily, and Slaughter charges around second, heads to third. Pesky goes out into short left to take the relay from Culberson. And here comes Enos Slaughter rounding second, going to try for home. Here comes the throw, and it is not in time. Slaughter scores.
So Stanky's up for the idea of trying to... Wait a minute. Stanky is being called back from the plate, and Lavagiotto goes up to hit. Gianfrido walks off second. Mixes off first. They're both ready to go on anything. Two men out, last of the night. The pitch swung on. There's a drive hit out toward the right field corner. Henrik is going back. He can't get it. It's off the wall for a base hit. Here comes the tying run, and here comes the winning run. Joe DiMaggio up. Outfield deep, round toward left, the infield overshifted. Here's the pitch. Swung on, belted. It's a long one. Deep in the left center. Back goes Gianfrido. Back. He makes a one-handed catch against the bullpen. Oh, doctor.
When somebody you love goes away, you gather to say goodbye. And nobody before or since was loved the way this man was.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Bambino, Babe Ruth.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You know how bad my voice sounds. Well, it feels just as bad.
Expansion. That was the mood of the 1950s. Baseball was busting out all over. To Milwaukee, to Baltimore, to Kansas City, and then to the West Coast. Along with new places, baseball got some new faces in the 50s, like the fuzzy-cheeked youngsters the Phillies fans called the Whiz Kids.
Setting the Phillies defensively, Puddenhead Jones is at third, Granny Hamner at short, Mike Goliad at second, Eddie Waitkus at first, and in the outfield, Del Ennis, Richie Ashburn, and Dick Sisler. Dick Sisler, the man whose unbelievable 10th inning homer against the Dodgers, got the team into this 1950 World Series.
If you were a fan of 1951, you listened to this game.
Bobby Thompson up there swinging. Black of throws. There's a left side!
The 1953 season was just 4 days old when Washington fans watched what may be the longest home run ever hit.
Yogi Berra on first base. Mickey Mantle at bat with a count of one ball, no strikes. Here's the pitch. Mantle swings. There's a tremendous drive going into deep left field. It's going, going. It's going over the bleachers and over the sign atop the bleachers into the yards of houses across the street. It's got to be one of the longest home runs I've ever seen hit. How about that?
All that year, Mantle and his mates kept pounding the ball, except for one memorable day in the fall.
The 0-2 pitch to Mize from Erskine. He struck it out! Carl Erskine has set a new all-time World Series record. He has struck out 14 men. And to a man, woman, and child, they're up on their feet out here in Flatbush.
The 1954 Indians won 111 games, an all-time American League record. But they couldn't win one game in the World Series against the Giants, mostly because of Dusty Rhodes' pinch hitting and this catch-off Vic Wertz by the Say Hey Kid.
There's a long drive way back in center field, way back, back, it is home! Second, Dolby is able to go to third. Willie Mays just brought this crowd to its feet with a catch, which must have been an optical illusion to a lot of people. Boy. Notice where that 483-foot mark is in center field. The ball itself, Russ, you know this ballpark better than anyone else I know, had to go about 460, didn't it? It certainly did, and I don't see how Willie did it, but he's been doing it all year.
Finally, in 55... the Dodgers stopped waiting till next year and won the World Championship.
Johnny Podras on the mound. Here's the pitch. Barra swings, and he does hit one of the opposite field. Down the left field line. Sandy Amaral races over toward the foul line. He makes a sensational running one-hand catch. He turns, whirls, fires to Pee Wee Reese. Reese fires to Gil Hodges at first base in time to double up Gil McDougal, and the Yankees' rally is done.
It was the Yanks and Dodgers again in 56. But this time, Don Larsen pitched with no windup, and the bums wound up with no hits.
Mitchell waiting, stands deep, feet close together. Larsen is ready, gets the sign. His strike 4-1. Here comes the pitch. Strike three! A no-hitter, a perfect game for Don Larsen!
In 1957, it was the Braves that made Milwaukee famous.
The pitch to Henry Aaron, a swing and a drive back into center field, going back towards the wall. It's back at that fence. And is it caught or not? It's a home run. The Braves are the champions of the National League. Henry Aaron just hit his 43rd home run of the year.
In 1959, the Go-Go White Sox, along the American League doormat, pulled themselves out from under those damn Yankees and toppled them for the pennant.
Jim Landis, right-hand batter now, steps in here at Comiskey Park, Chicago, to face Milt Pappas, the Baltimore right-hander. Game tied, 1-1. It's the last half of the sixth inning. The White Sox at bat. Aparicio on second base. Nellie Fox getting a pretty good-sized lead off first. Pappas looking in for the sign from his catcher, Triandos. Here's the set. Here's the pitch. There goes Aparicio to third. The throw by Triandos is not in time to Brooks Robinson. Fox takes second, and it's a double steal for the running White Sox.
The 60s, everybody can remember the 60s. A dramatic last time at bat by Ted Williams. That's what I'll always remember, because I was there.
The count 1-1 to Williams. Everybody quiet now here at Fenway Park after they gave him a standing ovation of 2 minutes, knowing that this is probably his last time at bat. One out, nobody on, last of the eighth inning. Jack Fisher into his windup. Here's the pitch. Williams swings, and there's a long drive to deep right. That ball is going, and it is gone. A home run for Ted Williams in his last time at bat in the Major League.
The 60s may go down in baseball history as a decade of smashed records. In 1961 alone, two of Babe Ruth's mightiest records fell. Whitey Ford beat his mark a World Series scoreless inning, and of course, the record they said would stand forever.
Here comes Roger Maris. Just standing up, waiting to see if Maris is going to hit number 61. Here's the windup. Fastball hit deep to right. It could be it. Way back there. Holy cow, he did it. Roger Maris. And look at him fighting for that ball out there. greatest sights I've ever seen here at Yankee Stadium.
Nobody will ever outsteal Ty Cobb. That's what they said until 1962, when Maury Wills swiped 104. There's one modern-day pitcher even the old-timers put on their all-time list.
It is 9:46 p.m. 2-2 to Harvey Keene. One strike away. Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung at and missed. A perfect game. On the scoreboard in right field, it is 9:46 p.m. in the city of the Angels, Los Angeles, California. And a crowd of 29,139. Just sitting in to see the only pitcher in baseball history to hurl four no-hit, no-run games. He has done it four straight years, and now he capped it on his fourth no-hitter. He made it a perfect game. And Sandy Koufax, whose name will always remind you of strikeouts, did it with a flourish. He struck out the last six consecutive batters.
4 years, four different American League champs. Everybody but Yankee fans figured it was great for baseball.
The Twins have won 98 games. Number 99 means the pennant. Here's the windup. And the pitch. Strike three! Strike him out! The Twins win! Final score! The Twins 2. The Senators 1. The Twins have won the American League pennant.
Next, it was the Orioles' turn, and they took it all in 66.
The outfield around to the left to Frank Robinson, a right-hand batter. Long drive to left field. Way back, kiss it goodbye. Home run.
...1967 marked the closest race in American League history as the Red Sox came from ninth in 66 to finish first in 67. And an impossible dream became possible.
Here's Carl Yastrzemski, and there's a long drive toward right field. Back near the bullpen, it is going to be gone, a home run! Lonborg is within one out of his biggest victory ever, his 22nd of the year. And his first over the Twins. The pitch is looped towards shortstop. Petrocelli's back. He's got it. The Red Sox win. And it's pandemonium on the field.
Finally, the Tigers, who had gone hungry for 23 years, ate him up alive in 68.
Three men on, two men out. Game tied, 1-1 in the ninth inning. McDaniel checking his time with Jake Gibbs. The tall right-hander ready to go to work again. And the windup and the pitch. He swings a line shot. Base hit. Right field. The Tigers win it. Here comes K-Line to score. And it's all over. Downward singles. The Tigers bob down. K-Line has scored. The fans are steaming on the field. And the Tigers have won their first pennant since 1945. Let's listen to the bedlam here at Tiger Stadium.
There is no ending for what began 100 years ago. This great game stays great because for every veteran that calls it quits, there's a rookie that breaks in. Or a Mickey Mantle retires, a Ted Williams returns.
I haven't had a good year since about 1962 or 63. And I've been thinking about retiring, and I got into Fort Lauderdale last night, and I talked to Ralph Houck for about an hour on the phone, and I met and had breakfast with Mike Burt this morning, and we all three got together and just decided it was about time that we give somebody else a chance to try to help the ball club.
I felt that if I was ever going to get back in baseball, this was the time. I knew my position was reasonably secure, and I felt that there was no other way to go but up. And I guess probably I wanted to get back in it more than I might have indicated.
There you have it, 1869 to 1969. It's stories and it's sound. From one ball club in Cincinnati, Ohio, to over 150 teams from coast to coast in Canada. 100 years of baseball. And yet, it's only the first 100 years.